If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
You want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? But that perfect balance is hard to find. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Check out MeUndies. August is National Underwear Month, and to celebrate, MeUndies is making it easier than ever to try the world's most comfortable underwear by giving you a risk-free guarantee. All National Underwear Month long. If you don't love your MeUndies, they're free. MeUndies are made from Lenzing Micromodal, a sustainably sourced, naturally soft fabric that's proven to be 3 times softer than cotton. Micromodal is an all-natural, breathable, eco-friendly fabric extruded from Austrian beech trees that actually inhibits odor. No stinky undies, just soft, cool, and cozy MeUndies. MeUndies are the ultimate feel-good undies for when you want to feel naked, but not actually be naked. All National Underwear Month long, you can feel them for yourself, risk-free. It's simple. If you don't love your MeUndies, they're free. Now until August 31st, get 20% off your first pair, plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/blogtalk. That's MeUndies.com/blogtalk. MeUndies.com/blogtalk.
The Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long-ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Hello.
Hi.
Well... It certainly has been a rollicking beginning to leading up to Mercury retrograde.
Yes, right? This is unusually irritating.
I know. Trust me, after saying, I don't have a landline that we can do this on because they're working on my DSL.
Yeah.
And that was why we weren't live last week.
Right.
So it was a harrowing experience.
Yeah. It's been fun already.
So I will give you the joy of discussing your week for a week and a half or so.
Well, Elvira, I have no idea. I was just saying that to Elvira before we started the show. I actually had to look down at my calendar to see what is it I did this week because I know I've been busy.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, my daughter had her back-to-school orientation thingy to get her schedule and all that this week, so we did that. And she's a junior this year, so it was fascinating. It was like magic. The process of the juniors compared to what it was like with the freshmen and sophomores
mm-hmm.
is amazing. It took a half an hour, and in years past, we've been there at least an hour, if not 90 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Didn't have to wait in any lines. It was bing, bang, boom. Here, we do this, we're out. It was great. Like, amazing.
Yeah.
That was fun. And scary that I have a kid that old, because I still feel like I'm that age, so weird.
It's okay. It gets
really
better.
Weird. And then professionally, I guess, we are starting to roll out a new product line at Milk and Honey. We're making herb mixes. So we brought in a love herb mix packet and a money drawing herb mix packet. And they're formulas that I've used myself. So they're amazing and smell delicious and are beautiful too.
Oh, good.
So I'm pretty stoked about that. And then we will be having a cleansing bath mix and a tranquility herb. So that's pretty fun. Getting those uploaded on our website and on our little Etsy store and putting them in the shop and making the labels and, you know, all the things that go with it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's ongoing, but the love mix and the money mix are officially out, and the other two will be out in the next week. So
cool.
That.
Yeah.
And
Did your son have a – wasn't there a engagement party?
There was a bridal shower.
A bridal shower.
My soon-to-be daughter-in-law and I was that was fun and weird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Bridal shower for daughter-in-law. Again, how am I old enough to have all that? And then last weekend, on Friday, when we did not do the radio show, I went and saw The Dark Tower, which is a Stephen King book, like my favorite book ever. And it's actually a series of books. And the movie was okay. But I still think it's amazing that it was made into a movie. And I've been talking to, like, this is how much of a Stephen King ridiculous dork fan I am.
Right.
I am in these Stephen King fan Facebook groups.
Oh, my goodness.
And people have been having all-out battles about this Dark Tower movie and whether it sucks or whether it's great or whatever. But some people have some very interesting plot theories about how this fits into the Stephen King universe. And it's been wonderful. I'm such
goodness.
A dork. I love it.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
So that's all my cheese.
Your cheese?
Yeah. Hey. How are you doing, Elvira?
Well, other than having a love-hate relationship with technology.
Yeah.
And finally having a meltdown, literally, I was standing with one of the, it was the AT&T technician. Because, see, the way the company I'm working with is they rent from AT&T. So there's a sort of a partnership. And they, meaning the people I rent from or that I get my DSL, have dominion over everything inside my location. And being able to make sure that it's attached at the AT&T telephone junction. But everything that sets up that line or lines, this is a double line, to coming into the house is AT&T.
Right.
So the junction box, the second junction box, everything back to switching stations. And you take your number off of AT&T, and then it goes to the company I'm working with. So they're not real happy. So it's not been, it wasn't one of those, oh, bless you, go have a
good
wonderful
luck.
Time, good
yeah.
luck, have a journey. It's kind of one of those, well, I don't know what to do. We've done our job, goodbye.
Yeah.
And, you know, so nobody's talking to anybody. And then I found a wonderful technician on the company I'm working with, and he walked me through everything, and he says, well, if all else fails, we do a vendor meet, which means we get AT&T rep, and we get our rep. And,
right,
and
that sounds like terrible.
And it's up. So by the time I finished, I was on the third round before that, and I just was standing there with the AT&T guy, and I found out that when he did what he did, I not only did not have my phone up and running, but then he had also taken out my DSL.
Right.
And I just started crying.
No.
You know, it was just like I lost it, and it was one of those where the guy says, don't worry, I'll get it done.
I'm sorry.
And he just, you know, he ran in and did what he needed to do, even though it's not his place. And then my technician came out today from the company I'm going, and he goes, all he had to do was hook this line with this line. I'm going,
right.
But so now we're talking to you by the delights of a wonderful DSL and phone line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we're on high speed.
Fancy.
Yeah, I feel kind of like,
yeah.
But it was a birthing process.
Yeah.
And the rest of it has just been weird stuff, clients coming and going, you know, different things with work happening, you know, with other, you know, my hourly work. Just, you know, it's been, I've come home tired.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I literally come home and thank goodness I can now stream with beauty and fastness. And I just stare at whatever it is I'm streaming because I'm tired. And today was actually very invigorating. I could, you know, realize we were going to do our show, and I'm like, my highlight.
And you said something about birth. It's our birthday.
It is our birthday.
Anniversary or both.
Anniversary, actually, but, you know, whatever. It's our 1 year.
Yay.
Yay. We survived.
Yeah.
And so have you all.
How perfect that on our anniversary of this show being in existence, The Priestess, The Witch, and The Cauldron, The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron.
Well, we're all one anyway.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
We are talking about Dionysus, who likes to party.
Hey. And this is cool. We are introducing another dimension to our previous, more female-based work that we've talked about.
Yeah, and thank you to the listener who wrote in and said, I want to learn more about Dionysus. Here we go.
Yep. Okay.
Yay.
Well,
okay.
And with that, we will charge in and start reveling.
Yes. And there's so much. I have like 10 pages of
stuff. Same here.
And,
same here.
You know, what's funny is, and we talked about this a little bit on our last show, but I just taught at a witch camp where we worked with a Greek myth and with the Minotaur and the Labyrinth. And so Dionysus, this is not his story, but it is at the end. He shows up. And, so we had a ritual where Dionysus was featured. And I did this process in this ritual of aspecting, which is when you make room for a god to share your body, and then he gets to talk and do stuff and pretend he's human for a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful gift. And since then, so Dionysus is one of my very special beloveds. We work together probably daily, I would say. That would be accurate. And now he has, you know, an altar in my house, and we do stuff and talk about things. And since Witch Camp, he's like, okay, so now I want you to do this for me, and I want this, and I want you to do a ritual, and I want you to do this thing. So I have, like, a checklist of jobs that Dionysus has given me. So, it's, you know, he's a party god, and he likes to have fun, but don't think that it's all going to be drinking and revelry and orgies, because he will give you to-do lists.
Yes.
Yeah. You want to work with him. So, with that said, Dionysus is a Greek god, and there is a lot of very interesting theory on where he actually originated from. In some historical leanings, teachings, thoughts, he is actually from, like, Turkey and more of what we might consider the Middle East. In other writings or theory, he comes from North Africa. But he is a god that was not born in Greece. He was born in another place. And I don't mean born literally like the story of this god's birth, but born as in where his origins are.
Right.
And then he comes to Greece and is adopted in many places in Greece. Because the thing we have to remember about the Greeks is we tend to think of the gods as Greek. And they're, oh, there's Aphrodite and there's Zeus and da-da-da-da-da. But the Greeks, the gods were not just ubiquitous to the whole country, right? There were cities, and they each had their specific way of working with that god. The gods were given these epithets, these secondary titles or whatever. Like there's Aphrodite Urania, and she has all of these special titles depending on where that town, village, or city, how they worshipped her. So that's the thing with Dionysus. To remember is he's got lots of these epithets, and we'll probably talk about some of them later. But that is where he was known in that specific region. But for the most part, all of the tales of his beginnings is that he was twice born. The twice born is different depending on which version of the tale you read. But the bottom line is Dionysus' father is Zeus. And Dionysus' mother is Semele or Semele, depending on
how you're going to accent it.
Right. And she was mortal.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing we know about Zeus is he was kind of a slut. And he spread his seed far throughout the countryside. And Zeus's wife, Hera, the queen of the gods, was quite angry and jealous, which, you know, you can't really blame her.
Yeah.
However, instead of being like, okay, Zeus, you POS, you're moving out, she would go after the women that Zeus
mm-hmm.
had. And most often Zeus would trick these poor women. And in the case of Dionysus, Semele is pregnant, and Hera is pissed, and she finds out, and she's going to do all these terrible things to Semele, and she starts to mess with Semele, basically, in one
mm-hmm.
verse of the story. Like, that's not really Zeus. Why do you think you're so special that Zeus would impregnate you? You're stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And really starts planting doubt inside his mind. And so Semele gets upset, and she's like, okay, if you're really Zeus, you have to prove it to me. You have to show me your true form.
Uh-huh.
And the thing to know about the gods is they can't show humans their true form because we can't handle it.
Right.
So they show us an anthropomorphized version, a human-like
mm-hmm.
version of themselves
mm-hmm.
so that we can actually look upon them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Semele's like, no, dude, that's not going to cut it. And he shows her his true form, and of course she can't handle it, and she dies. And depending on the version, either he takes the baby before she dies or she explodes and the baby flies into the air and Zeus catches it, whatever.
Right.
And he sews the baby into his leg
mm-hmm.
so that it can continue to gestate and grow.
Mm-hmm.
And then later when Dionysus is full grown, and by full grown I mean a full grown man.
Yes, totally and completely. Oops. Needs to come out of that line.
Zeus cuts him out of the leg, or in other versions he rips himself out of the leg, depending on the tale. And here we have Dionysus. And then Hera chases the poor boy all over Hell's Half-Acre,
right.
trying to make him feel like he's losing his marbles and,
right.
and going crazy and does all kinds of terrible things to him. Talk about an evil stepmother.
Really?
Poor Hera.
Yeah.
And that's one version of the tale. But and there's lots of other versions where Dionysus is born or he is brought into the world too soon, and then he's put into another form or
right.
body or a log in one
right.
version for safekeeping so that he can be born again when he's actually ready.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And didn't there's another a slight variation that Hermes
yeah.
helped by sewing, you know, the child and taking the child before the you know, the death process took over and,
yeah.
you know, so they kind of get everybody involved in some form.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah,
and, you know, and what's interesting to play with, ponder on, is maybe the town or the village or the city where the Hermes is part of the story,
mm-hmm.
maybe that's where Hermes is really worshipped
right.
a lot. And so they had to make sure that
make
their
sure
patron was
right,
you
know, got put in. Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But I love playing pretend when it comes
to oh, yeah.
Because
oh,
we
yeah.
can't really know.
No, we never really know. And of course, isn't the second death something about being chopped up or cauldronized or something? He was put in the cauldron. There's something about a cauldron there. And Herod gets, you know, again, tries to kill him, and he is saved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
twice born. Herod, there's many, many tales of Herod doing random things, chasing him, making him feel like he's going insane,
mm-hmm.
Putting a curse upon him, all kinds of things. And he always somehow manages to escape either by his own cunning or the assistance of another god or what have you.
Right.
And there's many tales of him. Also, I think we were talking about the pirate,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So Dionysus is chilling on the beach,
mm-hmm.
just being beautiful because he is considered one of the most attractive of all the gods. Sorry, Aphrodite.
Male version.
Well, he's very queer, actually.
No, they talk about him being
yeah.
gender fluid.
Yeah. But so anyway, he's chilling on the beach, and he's like, oh, this is amazing. I'm just chilling. And this ship of pirates goes by, and they think, oh, there's a very attractive man, person, gender fluid being. We could probably kidnap this person and make lots of money. And he also looks like he might be from a wealthy family. Maybe we could ransom him.
Mm-hmm.
So they kidnap him.
Mm-hmm.
However, they don't know that he's a god. And so all kinds of terrible things start happening. I think there's different versions of this tale, too. I think in one version, Dionysus, like, turns into a dragon or some creature mm-hmm. and knocks all of the seamen overboard and mm-hmm. they turn into dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. I wouldn't mind.
Yeah. If you're going to go from God anger, that.
Yeah. In other versions, they're knocked overboard and they drowned, or he turns into a monster and eats them.
I think the captain doesn't go along. He feels there's something wrong.
Right.
I remember that. I'm going, one sane person.
That's right. There's one sailor who's like, wait a minute, guys. This doesn't seem like a good idea.
Something's not right, really. There's something different about this person.
That's really funny. I love that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Dionysus lets him live because he proved himself to be a good human.
Right.
So just keep that in mind in your future travels. Don't kidnap any attractive young people from
people that might be divine, God is the disguise, yes. So
there's also a lot of stories, and Dionysus is often compared to Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons for this is because he does wander off at some point in his life into the woods
mm-hmm.
to seek wisdom
mm-hmm.
and commune with nature.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where he discovers the culture of the vine
right.
and begins to become connected to viticulture and winemaking and harvest and
mm-hmm.
all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And not that Jesus is connected to viticulture, but Jesus is connected to wine, right? He turns water into
wine.
He creates this miracle.
Mm-hmm.
It's well documented that Jesus wanders off to gain wisdom and goes into the desert with the disciples, and
mm-hmm.
they probably did peyote or whatever you do out in the desert to seek wisdom, right?
Yeah, altered state.
Yes. They just meditated a lot.
I know. Whatever.
And Dionysus travels with a pack of maenads, these women who go into ecstatic frenzy.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of what they did in their travels throughout the land was ecstatic ritual, going into ecstatic states, going, having mind-altering experiences
mm-hmm.
through ecstasis. And occasionally the maenads would go into such a frenzy that they would tear men apart.
Mm-hmm.
They would go into like a rage, a frenzy. And so for me, there is this, Dionysus is the ultimate feminist who travels
mm-hmm.
with feminism
mm-hmm.
in its most powerful aspect,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
up with no shenanigans.
Right.
No bullshit.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I know that in doing, the research and the things that they talked about, this was one time that the Greek men did not go and involve themselves because they left the females alone, because this is the one time the female could, in a repressive society, do what they were doing and not get caught up in it's a wrong thing to do or you can't do it. They were free.
Right.
So, yes, very much so.
Yeah.
So that was a plus on that. So, and of course, they talk about trance dancing.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, the Sufis do their dervishes.
Yeah.
You know, the dervish dancing.
There's a lot of traditions, actually, that use ecstasis, like go into ecstatic states. And sometimes we think, like drugs,
mm-hmm.
right? Drugs
mm-hmm.
are
mm-hmm.
a vehicle to going into ecstatic state. But there are so many other ways. You don't need drugs or alcohol to get to ecstasis. Dancing, singing, and a lot of it can be leading yourself through to exhaustion
mm-hmm.
and pushing past that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there is so many ways to work through to ecstasis. And I think dancing is probably right up there
mm-hmm.
with drugs.
Yeah. Well, and it's true. I mean, think about, and this is going to take us off Dionysus in one way, but not necessarily the thread that he carries in terms of the ecstatic process, is that when you started going into the 60s, you started going into the dancing that would take you out of the structure of what was, which was couples dancing.
Right.
And move you into a more hearing the music and dancing and doing the beat. And that, and then, of course, that plays back on to the concepts of the shamanic dance.
Right. Yes. Yes. And we are talking about a form of shamanism in the way that it is that he worked and mm-hmm. he worshipped and mm-hmm. his followers practiced,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I know every time this word comes up, I have to say this, but yes, shamanism is a very specific thing from a very specific region of Russia, Siberia, very specific tradition. We are not referring to that.
No.
We are referring to the more global understood word of shamanism, which is a specific way of relating to nature,
right,
magic, and mystery.
Right.
Right?
So, we are good at being politically correct.
I try.
No, I know. We do try. And we kind of go off on a tangent.
Sometimes I can't help it.
But, and that's, I think, what really, it was funny because when I was reading this and I was going, oh, okay, fine. And, but that really hit a chord with me because for me, dating myself, the dance process was what drew me into the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Following the body's movement and hearing the sound of the instruments or the singing or whatever it is, and moving, that to me was where I started way back
mm-hmm.
in a time that I would say that's when I started to find the way to spirit. If it was not, but it wasn't called that, it didn't see it as that, and I didn't relate to it that way. It was just a way to get into that energy,
mm-hmm.
however we want to define it, say it, or you know, clothe it.
Yeah.
And to me, that has always been a doorway for that.
And I will say, you know, for folks who are interested in developing relationship with this deity, ecstasis is part of the package.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean you have to become a drunk.
Or a druggie.
No, please do not do any of those things. It also doesn't mean that your body has to be in a state where dancing is possible.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people have physical stuff, issues, wounds, whatever, that makes it so dancing isn't possible. That doesn't mean Dionysus isn't for you.
Right.
You can go into music. You can lay completely still and have an ecstatic experience listening to music and drumming.
Mm-hmm.
And not move a finger.
Right.
So, you know, there are lots of ways to enter into ecstasis. And I would highly encourage that research and study and learning and see where that
experimenting
takes you. Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And obviously, I thought of putting music on and having us bounce around here. But unfortunately, since this is only a radio show.
Yeah.
It wouldn't quite get there.
The listening to wouldn't be as interesting as the watching.
That's true.
Need like a little cam so you can watch us dance around Elvira's house.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of room to do that here, too, right? Ha ha.
It'd be pretty funny.
Or we do it outside, and my neighbors will definitely know I'm on the strange, strange side. But
so the other thing that I wanted to mention about this dance and frenzy and
mm-hmm.
the maenads, right, is the maenads, Dionysus is also considered chthonic, right? So he is one of those gods that brings change, that is
mm-hmm.
considered, you know, quote unquote, one of the dark gods,
right,
of the ones that works with mystery in the underworld.
Right.
And the maenads, it's believed that when they tear the living apart, when they go into that frenzy and they are ripping flesh and drinking blood and all of these kind
right.
of spooky, creepy things, it's actually considered blood sacrifice
mm-hmm.
and that they are feeding the souls of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not, it's an interesting process that going into this frenzy and this ecstasis actually connects us to the ancestors and the ancestral
right.
realm.
Right.
Very interesting. And this is another reason why he's considered the dying and arisen god,
mm-hmm.
right? Because
mm-hmm.
of this idea of being connected to the dead,
mm-hmm.
feeding the dead, working with the underworld.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's very fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know that one of the things that also seems to have, you know, he's obviously part of the harvest and that process, but it's also, he's not really in the harvest time. His birthday is actually December 25th. It is a time of celebration, and obviously I found it interesting because it was mentioned in some places that the 12 days after that were celebrated as part of his, you know, ongoing festival.
Mm-hmm.
And how how things have been borrowed and made you know, part of another myth, just
right.
like people of a certain Greek town take their particular deity version and create it around. This, of course, did the same thing with Jesus and the mythology that went there.
Right.
And so I thought, wow, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And he, you know, assuming his birthday is in December and
could not, it could be another day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, he grows up, Dionysus, grows up having to continue to be hidden, right?
Mm.
So he's born in the winter, and remember, we're talking about Greece, so the winter is not quite what you might experience if you're in Minnesota.
Right, that's true.
More temperate climate. But he has moved from island to island to island in order to keep him hidden from Hera.
Right.
And he finally reaches an age, and in some tales it's 33, which is the age Jesus was when he was crucified. He reaches a certain age where he finds out about the magic of the vine and wine and all of this stuff, and that's when Hera strikes him with madness. And he actually wanders off into the mountains mad.
Right.
And he's developed this wisdom, but he can't access it because he's not in his right mind.
Exactly.
He is suffering from the madness, right?
Mm.
And in some versions of the story, he comes on Cabelli or Rhea, depending on which version of the tale, but he comes to the ancient mother goddess.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to, in his wanderings through the desert, struck with madness, he comes to the ancient mother goddess and is taught the ways of magic and finds his way back to himself.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have to start looking at what was Hera really doing.
Mm-hmm.
Is she an initiator? Did she send him on a journey knowing
right.
full well what she was doing or not? And whatever. I mean, this, it's not about Hera. But, you know, I'm a stepmom, so sometimes I'm like, can we just not
yes.
criminalize stepmoms all the time?
Yes.
Not all evil, okay?
No, they're not. I am a stepmom. You're a stepmom.
Yeah.
And we definitely aren't evil.
Yeah, most of the time.
Well, that's true. I just pick and choose when I am. And I'm also a grandmother, so I can pick and choose being the fairy godmother or the
evil stepmother.
The evil stepmother and grandmother.
But I think that's a really important that there is a point where we get struck with madness in many different forms, where we are not completely in control of our faculties. And finding our way home from that
right.
is very powerful. And having the mother goddess in the version of this story, having the mother goddess lead him home and show him the ways
mm-hmm.
to access that madness. Because being in that madness state wasn't necessarily bad. He just couldn't, he had no control. He had no agency.
Right.
And the mother goddess shows him how to access that state of being and find his way back.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so amazing. And he is he's the last of the gods to be considered an Olympian.
Right.
He's the only of the Olympians that was born of a human mother.
Mm-hmm.
None of the other Olympian gods are connected to humanity
at all in that way.
Yeah.
And interesting enough is one of the versions of his myths
mm-hmm.
is that he goes to the underworld and brings his mother back up to
yes.
sit in Olympus
right.
at the circle or the council or the whole process. So
right.
I thought that's elevating mother to an honored place again.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, again, that chthonic
mm-hmm.
god.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the gods can't access the underworld. They don't have, once Hades took control of the underworld in the Greek myths, that was it. That was Hades' realm, and you weren't allowed to go there.
Right.
And there are a few gods who are, what is the word?
Psychopomp.
Thank you. That's exactly the word. It's like pomp and circumstance. No.
Not quite.
Yeah, there's like Hermes.
Hermes.
Hecate.
Mm-hmm.
These are psychopomps who can go between the realms.
Mm-hmm.
Dionysus is not considered a psychopomp. However, he was able to go and get his mother back.
Right.
Because he's chthonic.
Right.
Ooh, witchy stuff.
I know. It's so exciting.
I just love talking about this stuff. It's so hilarious. I make myself laugh. What a dork I am.
Oh, well. Hey, look. We have our moments here, so.
All right. So I'm noticing the time. We should
yes.
probably take a break.
Okay.
But when we come back, I'm going to tell the queerest story ever.
Oh, that'll be wonderful.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
Is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hooter Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Candela's Corner with Candela Canvisa, Michael Carell, and Lady A, Mondays 5 to 7, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, In the Streets with Beverly Smith, Tuesdays 6 to 7, On Sacred Ground with Kai Armand and Paige the Fear You, Wednesdays 3 to 4:30, Fit and Foxy with Madame Nadia and Jaya Adanya, Wednesdays 6 to 7. The Now You Know Show with Professor Charles Porterfield, Thursdays 6 to 7:30. The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, Fridays 6 to 7. And Liquid Libations with Andrea Weston, Saturdays 5 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
And we're back.
And we're back.
Yes.
All right. So I promised a really queer story, and I'm trying to find the name of this person in my notes. Of course, I have 10 pages of notes, as I may have noticed, so I can't find the name. So I'm going to tell you the story without the name.
We'll go for it.
And then maybe as I'm telling the story, I'll randomly find it. Who the hell knows? Okay. So once upon a time, there was someone, some Greek person
mm-hmm.
There was some Greek person who was so in love with Dionysus, a male person, and he knew how to help Dionysus get to the underworld,
mm-hmm.
right? As we mentioned, he went to the underworld to save his mother, Semele, after she had died. And so, I almost found the name, Polymnus. So Polymnus is his guide and helps him get to the underworld. And the deal that they make, Polymnus says, I will help you get to the underworld, but as a repayment, you must be my lover.
Mm-hmm.
Dionysus is very, very attractive. And Dionysus agrees. He's like, yeah, okay, you know, I'm down for that. You're cute. I'm cute. Let's do this. So they get to the underworld. They rescue Semele. But on the way back, Polymnus dies.
Oops.
He doesn't make it
mm-hmm.
out of the underworld. However, Dionysus felt it was very important that he honor his pledge.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to satisfy the ghost of Polymnus. Otherwise, mm-hmm. he'll be haunted by
right.
his spirit. He doesn't want that. So he creates a phallus, an olive branch.
Mm-hmm.
He fashions this phallus and puts it on the tomb of Polymnus.
Oh, my goodness.
And makes love to it.
All right.
Right?
Okay.
Love it.
Yes.
I love so much about this story. A, I love that it's super queer. B, I love that he fashions a phallus out of an olive branch. C, I love that he honors his pledge.
Right.
And he does it on a tomb. I love everything about this story so much. And what's funny about it is that it is believed that how did this story survive?
Really?
How did this story survive? So it is believed that this story actually survived through all of the rounds of Christianity and the different oppressions of sexuality and all this.
Right, right.
Because it was meant to discredit paganism. It was believed that this was so far-fetched and so out there that it would actually make paganism look
ridiculous, stupid.
And I think it's amazing. It's one of my favorite stories of Dionysus.
Well, I mean, how many times have we, you know, you go to your ancestors, you go to the places where they are either entombed or otherwise, and party and hang out with them.
Picnic.
Yeah.
And how your life's going.
So as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to make love to whatever, it's okay.
Love it.
I know.
You can love that story. So now I've just revealed a bit of my odd for all of you.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Well, we're both unusually talented in many ways that we would probably, this is part of our mystique. Well, I'll add to that just so you get an idea. When I went to Philadelphia with my deceased husband and he was alive at that time, but subsequently died, he wanted to take me to see his mom, so we did that, and we, you know, went around, and I wound up wanting to go to Ben Franklin's grave. And it's
sure.
this beautiful slab thing that they put together. They don't have any huge headstones. And I was, you know, because Ben Franklin was a womanizer. He
yeah.
loved the women.
Yeah.
And I went, okay. So I laid down on the tomb. And I laid on there, and I'm going, okay, I'm here, you know, feeling the energy. And, of course, there was a docent walking around, and she was horrified, and she's trying to shoo us off, and how disrespectful. And I'm thinking, no, you probably got a good jack-off on that one. So, but...
Oh, dirty language from Elvira.
I did say that. I'm sorry. No, I'm not. And I'm not even in the ecstatic state or have any alcohol or wine. So, just a lot of energy. So, yeah, that was one of those moments. So it isn't any stranger.
No, we're just generally strange.
We are. So some of the other things about Dionysus are the things that are sacred to him.
Yes, I was just looking at that. My notes.
We're in tune.
Yes.
So I know that the pine cone, of
yep.
course, is very sacred, and it is one of the big things that it tips the staff that he has.
Yes, the
Thyrsus.
Yeah. Clearly, neither of us speak Greek. I apologize.
That's it. We're as best as you can get, which is his wand.
Yeah.
Staff wand.
Right. It's very phallic.
Yes, it is.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so that gives you an idea of that. And one of the things I found, which is interesting, was about the jar. There's a festival that kind of got, again, one of those small towns that obviously incorporated, you know, some of these things, and it was a jar ceremony. It was like the first day was the jar opening, which is when the wine was opened and tasted.
Ah,
I know. And then the second day was the pitcher feast, where, of course, they had the wife of the present head of that town would present herself to the god to be impregnated.
Mm.
Mm. And then the third day was the Feast of the Pots, and that's honoring the dead and asking for, you know, resurrection through new life.
Nice.
Yeah, I kind of was interested in that.
I like it.
Yes.
He's also connected to the bull,
uh-huh.
which is interesting. If you look, I'm not going to talk about this for very long, but if you look at Mithras,
uh-huh.
which is Roman,
uh-huh.
there's this whole bull,
uh-huh.
interesting potential correlation maybe.
Right.
But there's what is actually really fascinating about that is Mithras, this Roman god,
uh-huh.
and Jesus. Are twinsies.
Yes, they are.
Everything about them is the same.
Yep.
So this is an interesting, the bull here being
mm-hmm.
an interesting similarity between
right.
Mithras and Dionysus.
Mm-hmm.
He's connected to the serpent.
Right.
He's connected to the tiger. You often see images of him or imagery of him wearing a leopard skin
mm-hmm.
across
mm-hmm.
him. And then even in like ancient images of him in pottery and things
mm-hmm.
like that, he is wearing... a leopard skin.
Mm-hmm.
He's often seen riding a leopard very often.
Right.
And I don't, honestly, I don't know. Were there leopards in Greece?
I don't know.
Maybe something more from North Africa.
That would be the case.
Right.
And, you know, some of it has also been talked about as the panther. So,
yeah.
A large, big cat that doesn't necessarily roam around Greece.
Right.
You know. And
but who knows, back then, maybe there were.
There were possibly. You, again, we didn't know what was the old version and what we now know.
Yeah.
You know, that.
And often Greek gods drive chariots because, you know,
mm-hmm.
why not?
Yeah.
His are pulled by panthers
mm-hmm.
often or leopards occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
He's often connected with satyrs and centaurs. These,
right.
These half-man, half-beast creatures.
That party,
especially satyrs, are very much known as kind of being kind of lechy gross, actually.
Yeah.
A little
yeah.
too sexually aggressive.
Right.
But there is this connection with this wildness
mm-hmm.
and being connected to the wild.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So there is that. And interesting is that, obviously, a moment here that I kind of lost my train of thought, and I'll wait till it comes back into a station. Oh, one of the things that I noticed, it did come back quickly, is that again, a more modern interp is Percy Jackson and all of the different young adult, quote-unquote, books. And, of course, Dionysus plays a major role in the particular demigod camp. Mm-hmm. And, unfortunately, the poor guy has been, because of some things he did, he's been kind of, I don't want to say, he's been reprimanded to be there, and he doesn't really want to be there, and he can't have wine. He can only drink Coke. So everything that he gets until he serves his time. But I was thinking of that because I really thoroughly enjoyed not just the movie, but the books. And I was, you know, they were talking about he does tend to kind of come to the rescue of these demigods that are going through issues of whatever. So I always thought of that. And, of course, I'm thinking there was always a centaur, and, you know, of course, he was a good guy centaur, and then there was a satyr who wasn't a bad guy, and Lecce, so, I mean, you know, Lecce. So.
Those Lecce satyrs.
Lecce satyrs.
You can't, gotta watch your back around them.
No kidding. So, yeah, it was kind of interesting how they revisioned it for a more, you know, contemporary process.
And speaking of revisioning, then we have the Romans who took Dionysus and connected. There's actually a couple of different Roman gods that are believed to be connected to Dionysus, but the one we most often think of is Bacchus.
Mm-hmm.
And Bacchus kind of, okay, so I'm going to say some things. This is totally my opinion.
It's totally hers.
This is all on me.
Okay.
I willingly accept it. What I feel like is we have Dionysus, this ancient god of wildness.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a piece of him that gets tamed because of viticulture.
Right.
And he gets connected to wine.
Right.
And that is the way he's still wild, but he also understands how he needs to be tamed.
Mm-hmm.
And this energy is taken and turned into Bacchus, who is just the epitome of everything that, like, what the seven deadly sins were based off of.
Yes.
he's a massive bulk of a man, and he eats all the things and drinks all the things and screws all the things, and he just, it's like it becomes a caricature of what Dionysus represents. And it's to me, it just feels like
very lascivious.
It's just not as beautiful.
Yeah. No, but then think of the dynamics here. Think of this. You know, the Romans had a certain point where that would be how they did with so many of the deities. And they did just that. But Bacchus, unfortunately, when you think of it, he becomes a caricature of what the Dionysus energy really represents.
And it doesn't feel like an honest and balanced, you know, like we have Zeus and then Jupiter. Jupiter, right? So this is the same dude with a new name.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is not like that. And what is interesting is Liber is a Roman god who's actually much more in alignment with Dionysus.
Right.
They have much more in common.
Right.
But we put Bacchus and Dionysus in this, like, they are the same god.
Right.
Just, they're not.
Yeah.
They're really not.
No, they're not. And I think it's interesting because this Liber Pater.
Yeah.
And he's a fertility god.
Right.
And I think he had a wife named Libera. And, you know, so there were certain things about him, as you say, had a more true ring to Dionysus.
Yeah.
Truthfully, than Bacchus. And,
And what's beautiful about Dionysus is he was worshipped long after the Greeks were converted. And it's believed that most of Greece was converted before 1000 AD to Christianity. But there is definitely some instances throughout the years from then until now of pockets of Dionysian worship.
Right.
We can't know if all of these little tales are true or not, but it is fascinating. And one of the things I'd never heard of this. Now, my partner is British, So sometimes things that are just commonly known in Britain,
mm-hmm.
I've never freaking heard of. So I asked him, I was like, hey, have you ever heard of this? And he was like, oh, yeah, I totally know about that. So in the 18th century, there were these things called the Hellfire Club. Have
uh-huh.
you ever heard of this?
No.
Yeah, never heard of this before. They were all over Britain and Ireland, supposedly. But they were secret underground clubs, like where you'd have to know the password and knock on the door. And
right.
Like, you know, Ivo, Evo, Hey, Dionysus or some shit.
Right, right.
And then they would let you in to this ritual room where they would have shrines erected for Dionysus, and they would have, like, all kinds of pagan ritual and sometimes, you know, orgies and drinking and carrying on.
Right,
but
right.
actually, it wasn't just Dionysus. There have been hellfire clubs discovered with shrines to Venus
uh-huh.
and Flora
uh-huh.
and other Roman gods and,
uh-huh.
and Greek gods. And apparently there is one hellfire cave somewhere in England. I'm going to find it. And there's still a statue of Dionysus left from the 1700s when they
oh
were doing.
Oh, my goodness.
I love it.
That's great.
So, yeah, that's my goal. The next time I go to England, who knows when the hell that's going to happen. But I am going to find this hellfire cave. So,
hey, you know.
It has been said. And so
We definitely have something here, you know, it'll become your battle cry.
Yeah, that's right.
You find the Hellfire Cave of Dionysus.
In England.
In England. Nowhere else, just England.
Yeah, that's where this one's supposed to be.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have good old Ephraim Lyon, or Lyon.
Yes.
Who, in 1820, created the Church of Bacchus in Connecticut.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah, I don't think it still exists. But
probably a good thing.
And in 1820, that's pretty ballsy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, considering, I mean, they were, you've got to realize we see this as ancient.
Yeah.
And then we have sort of this mystique point of reference of what happens once you get to the 14th, 15th, 16th, and 17th centuries.
Right.
And then all of a sudden we get to the 18th and 19th centuries and things start to change.
Yeah, true.
And, you know, they quote rediscover. And I think what it is that it becomes another version, just like, you know, the Theosophists and the New Thought people.
Right.
So I'm certainly aware that we have that other little catchphrase before we get into the, you know, remembered paganism revival process.
Yeah.
So, but... yeah, so that, you know, it's a good thing. I like sitting here and discussing this. I think we have a lot of different versions of the mythology and things. Of course, you could say something about the versions of Pan and Dionysus with horns, because I know that there's a particular version that he's kind of put with horns.
Right. I think it's that wild god that wanders the realm,
mm-hmm.
right? But yeah, there is a imagery of Dionysus with horns,
mm-hmm.
and it's that wild.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why he's connected to the satyrs.
Satyrs, right.
Satyrs are horns.
They have little horns on,
yeah.
But
yeah.
goat-like.
Yeah.
But, and... interesting is that with the Minotaur, now one version said that he married
Ariadne. Yes.
And brought her
to the god. Right, right.
So I was.
Yeah, he saved her from abandonment on the island of Naxos. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, but according to our conversations, he said, no, she was a goddess without me. She didn't need
mm-hmm.
me. I just
mm-hmm.
fell in love with her.
Right.
So I like that better.
Truly, well, again, that kind of gives you a better version of the fact that he honors the female deity or the divine female. So that's good.
Yeah.
And
so should we say some of his epithets?
Sure, you go for it.
Like, can he murder some Greek birds and...
ghosts, we always
I
have
apologize
them.
In advance. So a little secret about me. My magical name is actually very long. I have many magical names, and I just keep adding to my magical name instead of changing it every few years, like sometimes we might want to do as pagans
mm-hmm.
and witches, because we evolve and change.
Oh, yes.
I just add a new name to my already very long name.
Okay.
So because Dionysus and I have been working together for several years now, today I decided I need a new magical name to be added that represents Dionysus. So I haven't decided which one yet, but I'm about to read the epithets, and one of these epithets is about to be my new name.
Okay, here, live on this show.
Hey, oh, shit, I don't know about that.
Sure.
Okay. It's what I actually have to pronounce, so that'll help. So we have Aratophorius, giver of unmixed wine, which is from Arcadia.
Mm-hmm.
We have Aquarurites. Doesn't say what that means, but it's from Sion.
Mm-hmm.
Adonius. This is actually apparently a rare one, and it's considered to be an epithet for Bacchus.
Oh, wow.
Go with that.
Okay.
Agobolus, the goat killer.
Okay.
Asemides, ruler or lord.
Mm-hmm.
Agrios, which is wild.
Mm-hmm.
Briseus, he who prevails. Ooh, I like that one. Bromios. Roaring, as connected to the death and resurrection.
Right.
Like the roar of thunder. Oh, that's an interesting one, too. Oh, man, I'm not even going to try and pronounce that one. But apparently it's a pig plucker. Apparently it's also a slang for female genitalia.
Okay.
I like this.
Okay.
Bethonios, the subterranean one.
Mm-hmm.
Dendrides, he of the trees. Dithyrambos. Apparently this refers to him being prematurely born.
Right.
Eucerios, the liberator. Enrendrios, he in the tree. And Orches, with balls.
I like that,
that
one.
That one's good. That one's good.
Okay.
His testicles. That might be the one for me. Erycryptos, completely hidden.
Mm-hmm.
Euios.
Mm-hmm.
Ickes. This is probably connected to the Eleusinian Mysteries.
Right.
Lichniets, he of the winnowing fan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Onius, the god of the wine press.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one I have is Pseudonor. Literally, this means the false man. It comes from Macedonia, and it's believed that this refers to him having woman-like qualities.
Aha!
He's not completely a man.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know. An Orches with balls. I kind of like it. I don't know if that's what I'm going to pick, but that's the front runner right now.
I'm
a terrible person.
It's okay. We'll catch it, and then, you know, you'll tell me later sometime in the future.
Yeah, I'll be like, from now on, I will be... Maybe it's Bromios, because I can actually pronounce that one. I don't know. This is too much. I apologize. I've gone on far too long.
Well, Bigrus I like, actually. Cretan.
Oh, yeah, Cretan. That's interesting.
Bigrus is Cretan. Mm-hmm. Yes. Kind of has its own.
And all right. I am noticing we are getting very close.
Are we getting close to our time?
Yes. We could go on about this forever.
We could probably have a great giggle all the way around.
Yes. Which you would thoroughly enjoy.
I'm sure. So
thanks.
Yes. And next week we will be doing Strega.
Yes. So another in our series about different traditions of witchcraft. We'll talk about Strega. We'll give some resources if you're interested in learning more.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about the history and the mystery
and some of the misbegotten situations.
Yeah, there's all kinds of interesting stuff, especially recently.
Yes. So, but it has been a pleasure, and I'm happy that we're back on track. And
thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.